Welcome back to Discerning Consciousness with your hosts, Mike and Ant-Man.
Hi everyone. In this episode, we've entitled it A State of Fear. So what we're actually talking about is the dissemination or spreading of fear in human consciousness through the means of terrorism. As all our listeners will be aware, there's been many terrorist events that have taken place recently. It doesn't seem to be off the headline news, does it, Mike?
No, they seem to be ramping up their state of fear.
Yeah, absolutely. As always, we like to start with a definition for the word terrorism. The Cambridge Dictionary defines it as violent action for political purposes, which is better known as an instrument of statecraft. And we can see that is a perfect description, really, for the kinds of imperialist action we've seen from Western powers in Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya and Syria in recent years.
Yeah, and this is either by direct involvement, i.e. funding to happen, or via political spin, using it to further a certain political agenda.
So, I mean, obviously, the big one in terms of terrorism was the creation of the War on Terror after the events of 9/11, which actually translates into a war of terror on the human population of the world. The classic Orwellian doublespeak in action there, I believe.
Yeah, and through the fact that this has no real confinements, it's an unending war, it's continuous.
Yeah.
And it almost seems to be like the enemy's changing week on, week out.
Because, of course, how do you define, you know, who is the terrorist? I mean, what is the terror? It's just this idea that will just go on forever and ever and ever. And I think that is the point, isn't it, really?
Yeah. I mean, the true enemy is fear itself.
Yeah, absolutely. I would agree with that. I mean, let's just say, in terms of creating fear, one of the main reasons why a state does that in order to promote its own agenda, and one of the key mechanism it's done through, is creating enemy in foreign lands, and then that's used to justify wars against these people and bring in oppressive new laws restricting liberty and freedom at home. And that, as I say, I think that's in the post-war era, post-Second World War era, that's been the main mechanism by which governments in the West have used to justify war, haven't they, really?
Yeah, I mean, it's almost to the point now where, I think a comedian once said, if you've got to get touched up to board a plane, I think the terrorists have won.
Yeah. I guess it depends who's doing the touching up. But yeah, yeah.
Now, we at Discerning Consciousness always like to look at both sides of an argument. And the truth is, with terrorism itself, is one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. So terrorism hasn't just come out of the blue because, you know, one day they decided, do you know what, I really hate America, I want to see it fall. It's the fact that every time the Western society has interacted with these states, it's always been to the betterment of the Western society and the deterioration of the state they're interacting with. So whether it's military, political, or if it's just a financial corporation going in there and deciding, do you know what, we're going to pay you nothing, take all your resources and destroy your lands.
Which is, of course, there's going to be a lot of opposition created in an instance like that. And back to your point about the idea of a freedom fighter, of course, during the era of apartheid, when Nelson Mandela was locked up for nearly 30 years, of course, the West saw him as a terrorist. But once they sought to obviously bring about the collapse of apartheid, really for corporate interests, not for any idea of freedom and freedom or the betterment of humanity, he was then rebranded as a hero and as a, as you know, a true man of peace. So again, it's interesting how they'll just rebrand people for their own ends, basically.
Yeah. So it almost happens all the time, especially in the media spin of things, because we won't necessarily ever hear the truth of what happened.
No.
Or the full story.
No.
We'll only hear the bits that help propagate a certain political agenda. And so you'll always hear the media spin on the story. You know, so one week they could be freedom fighters because they're helping the US out. Next week they're terrorists.
Or rebels, yeah. So it just depends on, you know, who the West, what particular leader they're supporting at that particular time in terms of how they're defined. Again, also in terms of media spin, you have the idea of creating a context and how a particular story in terms of how a terrorist event is covered. And you can see that they use certain images, like on 9/11 you had the people running away from the towers as they were collapsing. And these images that were projected over and over to, you know, elicit a certain reaction in the people.
And with media, you have to obviously talk about the doublespeak that you find in it. Because they're always using terms against you in the media. I mean, one thing they always did hugely when it came to 9/11 was the whole, you've got to trade your freedom for security, or trade freedom for liberty.
Well, that's not a very good deal, is it, really?
No.
When you think about it, yeah, it's absolutely, completely absurd, to be honest, when you really think about it. Also, in terms of the media spin, I'm thinking in terms of how they covered the actual so-called storming of the compound where Osama bin Laden was said to be living, and the way in which you had an image of the whole Clinton, his cabinet, effectively. They were looking at the screen almost in awe of what was going on, and it just seemed like this completely fabricated image. And also you had the image of a supposedly Osama bin Laden in this cloak from behind, and you know, it just didn't make any sense. It just seemed to be completely fabricated, to be honest.
So it just goes to show, the more you watch the news about terrorism, the more you'll be misled and misinformed about what's really going on.
Yeah, and of course what they don't ever cover is the fact that, although what we're talking about is state-sponsored terrorism, whereby it's not actually, what we're being told is not actually happening, so it's not a, you know, disaffected Islamic youth in France taking a call to arms, in, you know, to protect the interest of Islam. And in a lot of cases, it's actually the state who is concocting this. But having said that, in a lot of countries, say in Iraq and Libya, where the West has gone in and essentially societies have completely collapsed, you've got no civil society. That is the ideal breeding ground for recruiting terrorists, because, I mean, if you're a young male and your only chance, you know, to earn money is to join, you know, Islamic State, so-called Islamic State, then what are you going to do? That's, you haven't got any choice. And again, that's part of the reason why not only do they wage war on these countries, they provide the ideal fertile ground for terrorism to rise up.
Yeah, and this is when it really comes to the main aim of what they're after, in terms of their problem reaction solution. So they started off with the fact that they wanted to control our lives down to the very last detail. So what they're doing at the moment is trying to propagate as much fear as possible. So that's what we end up asking for.
It's almost, we almost demand it, don't we?
Yeah.
In order to protect ourselves. Yeah. There's obviously quite a long historical precedent in terms of false flags, or problem reaction solution, more commonly known as, in February 1933, we had the Reichstag fire, when the German parliament was set on fire by the Nazi regime, but it was blamed on the communists. And many Communist Party leaders were arrested, and a state of emergency was declared afterwards, which is very interesting, because that is often the case with a major terrorist event. We saw after the attacks in Paris last November that the French government brought in emergency powers, which is effectively a state of emergency, and they've remained in place ever since. And you might not have seen it in the mainstream news, but the French population en masse has been protesting against those extended powers. But again, because of media spin, we haven't even seen that story.
Well, I'm glad they're protesting.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, this sort of behaviour is nothing new. This is not a new format.
No.
This is something that's been going on ever since the birth of civilization.
Yeah.
And a prime example would be what happened with the Caesars in Rome. Because beforehand, it used to be their version of the parliament used to run the thing. And then Caesar took power under emergency actions and then never let them go. And Rome stayed like that until it fell.
Sure, yeah, so it's always through crisis you have these things brought in. Another other very common false flag that a lot of listeners probably heard of is, of course, 1941, we had Pearl Harbor attack. American naval base there, and they knew that the Japanese were going to attack, so they had prior knowledge, but then they allowed the attack to happen because this was then used to justify America's entry into Second World War. And then lastly, 9/11, which doesn't need a lot of explanation because of course it led to the whole war on terror and the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, which we're still seeing the legacy of now. So in terms of false flag terrorist attacks, there's some very common features or aspects. The main one, of course, is that the suspect in any attack, or suspects I should say, they always tend to be known by the police and intelligence agencies, but for some reason in the weeks or days before the attack was planned and carried out, they fell off the radar.
Yeah.
I mean, again, it just sounds implausible, doesn't it? We also, more recently, we've had this idea whereby the attacker or terrorist, you know, had a normal job, but had this second life as a radicalised Muslim.
And you always hear the neighbours say, he was always so quiet and normal.
He put his rubbish out, you know, he went off to work. We never suspected anything, but thereby creating the idea of the enemy within. Also, in terms of personality type, we're seeing this more and more in recent attacks, that the attacker was said to be a loner or who had mental health problems. Another common element is that the police are often warned that attack is imminent, again, but they seem to be unable to stop it. Again, that almost promotes the idea of fear even more, doesn't it?
Yeah, because we're almost helpless to what's going on.
Yeah, and another thing which again was common on 7/7 and 9/11 is the idea that drills were happening at exactly the same time. So again, my God, what a coincidence.
Well, it's the perfect cover if you're going to orchestrate something like this. Because if someone radios, oh, this is going on, they go, well, yeah, I know, it's been planned for months.
Yeah. And we've also got, you know, implausible patsies or storylines. This one that springs to mind for me is the 7/7 attackers couldn't have actually been in London on those tube trains at the time because the train that they were scheduled to get on from Luton train station was actually cancelled. And that's actually fact. People can go and research that for themselves. They couldn't have actually been in London. So again, it's a completely implausible.
But it's almost like the passport story with 9/11.
Yeah, exactly. And then after the attack, we often you'll get arrests of accomplices. Then the police will say, well, they thwarted further attacks. Or then you have the constant warning of the inevitability of further attacks. So that's our little kind of a synopsis, really, of the classic characteristics which you will see in many false flag attacks. And it's almost like a tick box, isn't it, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to the police, you know, they've always got to be some arrests, there's always got to be someone to blame. And it's that part of the story that starts to bring closure to what's going on.
Yeah.
Because remember, it's almost like a complete fabrication of reality in what they're trying to promote. So they have to finalise it. They have to say arrests have been made. They have to say he's to blame.
Sure, yeah. So, I mean, yeah, that's a great point you make, Mike, because then in the mind of the public, they're seeking, we all do as human beings, we seek, it's that horrible word, closure.
Yeah.
And it's like this little story that's tidied up, and it's always within days. You'll see, like, the attacks in Brussels, that within days you see them going in, these arrests have been made, and then in the public's mind, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, this story has some sense of completion.
Yeah, but it's almost like a soap opera, though, because there's always new storylines, there's always the latest thrill, there's always the latest whodunit.
Yeah, sure.
And it's episodal, so it's continually happening week in, week out.
Sure. With, again, mentioning the attacks that are happening at the moment in Paris and across Europe, we have them in Germany, this idea of the attacker being an extremist or who had been prone to radicalisation by a local imam. So these are, we didn't hear this so much maybe 10 years ago, but these are words and phrases, again, very Orwellian-esque, that are entering the vernacular. And one of the reasons why is because then when used in a broader context, anyone who is seen to be against the government, not just an Islamic terrorist or any other form of terrorist, anyone disagrees with the government has an extremist mindset and is therefore said to be radicalised. So more and more, I've seen reports suggesting that in France, actually, that those people that, you know, believe in conspiracy theories actually are, you know, is a form of extremism. So we can see the real agenda.
It's a form of labelling where it puts into the mindset easily that he's the problem. Because he's a terrorist, he's a extremist, he's radicalised.
Yeah.
It's buzzwords, it's selling a story.
Yeah. I mean, where this gets really kind of sinister, Mike, and as our listeners will know, is the fact that we now have, you know, this idea we must stamp out extremism and extremist ideas and prevent radicalisation. So we now, you know, a few years ago I was working in a school and we had a local police officer who actually came in and was speaking to the pupils about, you know, radicalisation and how teachers can recognise potential pupils who may be, you know, at risk of being drawn into radicalisation. This is a very sinister development, isn't it?
Well, anyone's got to watch the news and they get drawn into being radicalised.
Yeah.
It's a form of polarisation in one way or another.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people have their racist views by what the media tells them.
Yeah, sure. And of course, this again is classic divide and rule and promoting the idea that, you know, the terrorists could be right on your doorstep living, you know, a neighbour sort of thing.
Which is the whole thing of spreading fear so communities don't get together.
Yeah.
It's every man for themselves.
Yeah.
It's how they propagate the dog-eat-dog world.
Yeah. So, I mean, whether these attacks or are real or not or orchestrated, it's that it's the climate of fear and the promotion of the climate of fear which is their ultimate goal, isn't it?
Well, I wouldn't say it was the ultimate goal. The propagation of the fear is the means to get to their goal.
Yeah, sure.
And their goal is to make sure nothing happens without them knowing about it.
Yeah.
It's the complete surveillance state. Or, as George Orwell put it, imagine a human boot on the face of a man for the rest of our lives.
Mm. Yeah, that's it's a very disturbing thought, actually. Because just referring back to the idea of whether these attacks are staged or not, what we've seen again in recent years, Sandy Hook, and there were some researchers coming out saying the attacks in Paris, a lot of the footage actually wasn't real and was staged, is this movement towards whereby they carry out attacks and, you know, they may not even be real, but it has the same effect.
Yes, so it's like the whole film Wag the Dog.
Yes.
It's all about selling a story. It doesn't necessarily have to have happened or be true or not.
Yeah, and also it almost serves the dual purpose of creating division within the alternative community, because I know from, you know, Facebook posts and things, there's almost like this battle between those who are saying, well, it's disrespectful to suggest that the attacks in November last year in Paris were, you know, they didn't actually happen, and, you know, they were, and against people who were saying, oh no, they were deliberately staged. So again, it's like this divide and rule at a micro level. Do you know what I mean?
It's continuously happening all over the time.
Yeah.
And that's what happens when there's mysteries. People always cling to a solution or believe a certain narrative of the events.
Mm. And in terms of American terrorist events in America, many researchers, I believe a few books have been written on Sandy Hook to suggest that that was a complete concoction, and the children, they never even existed in the pictures. And
well, one thing that actually surprised me quite a lot is the whole idea of crisis actors.
Yeah.
And one news story I was watching about it, I actually saw the father of one of the little girls who had meant to have died actually start laughing as he was talking about it.
Yeah.
And it only lasted for like 10 seconds or so, but it just made me think, what the hell's going on here?
Yeah.
Is this an actor who's just, you know, lost it for a little bit and then got it back under control?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, bringing in the Britain, and it's not terrorism, but this whole theme is the MP that was killed Jo Cox.
Oh, yeah.
They interviewed, when they showed her sister, she was laughing and joking, and it just didn't, again, it just didn't seem to add up at all. Is this, you know, again, suggesting that maybe she was a crisis actor, if you will, and pointing to the fact that, are they mocking us? You know, are the powers that be or the people who are carrying out these things deliberately kind of doing a sloppy job to just, you know, to mock us?
Most probably.
Yeah, and probably there is some sort of occult reason, basically, why they're doing that as well, in order to empower themselves and such like. So moving on, we've got the other aspect of terrorism, which is in terms of who is actually carrying out these events and, you know, what is motivating them. Now, for in terms of false flag terrorist attacks, which were another word, way of describing it, is state-sponsored terrorism, there's a lot of evidence suggests, you know, they're actually agents who are mind-controlled, MK-Ultra candidates who, you know, on delivery of a keyword, they go out and carry out these events, don't they?
Well, that, I reckon, used to happen a lot in previous years, especially when it comes to, like, the JFK assassination, the assassination of Lee Harvey Oswald.
You mean the random shooter, perhaps like the John Lennon shooter?
Yeah, but not like that, just the shooting of Lee Oswald himself.
Yeah.
Because he was shot by someone who was apparently meant to be an MKUltra agent.
Yeah, sure.
But I have to admit, these days, I think it's a lot more simpler than that.
Yeah.
I think it just happens to be that MI6, CIA agents actually go over to these countries and actually stir up hate.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact is, it's already a domino set waiting to be knocked over, and you've just got to push the first domino over.
Sure, yeah.
And it all falls into place.
Yeah.
So it is almost that easy for them to coerce people into doing something.
Sure, yeah. And I think slightly different maybe in British and American context, where, say, for exact so-called acts of Islamic terrorism, you might have agents or assets, is a better word, who are controlled by intelligence agencies. So, you know, they may well want to perform acts of terrorism, but it's done in a kind of controlled way. So the outcome, because otherwise, if they just had, you know, people randomly doing these acts of terror, well, how can the West determine what's going to be the outcome? So
yeah, it's all about causing as much mental damage as possible without actually causing as much physical damage.
Yeah, because of course, as we said earlier, the West has fermented so much hatred towards itself because of all these illegal wars over the years. So there's plenty of fertile ground for people to be recruited. I would still, I don't know how you view this, Mike, I still think that most of the terrorist acts we see, there is some level of coercion or state control. I think very few acts of terror are kind of real, in the sense of it's like one lone, you know, radicalised Muslim who's, you know, performed an act of terrorism. I don't know what your view is on it.
Well, just take a step back and almost look at Al-Qaeda again.
Yeah.
Wasn't it apparently just meant to be, in their language, the database?
Yeah, sure, yeah.
Sort of database of contacts they had.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, and again, the absurdity of this, I think a lot of the so-called websites of Al-Qaeda, their all bases are in America or Florida somewhere. So again, it's...
And like, if we take ISIS, for example, they seem to be heavily well-funded with what looks like American military hardware.
Yeah, and, you know, Toyota 4x4s and, you know, good quality gold fringed flags. And, yeah, I mean, at what point did Al-Qaeda cease to exist and it was, you know, upgraded into Islamic State?
Well, I'm guessing the point that it got funded by the Americans.
Yeah, and again, I think the whole idea of, like, a group that wants to create an Islamic caliphate is even more extreme in the public mind. It's, oh my God, you know, that's even more evil. They want to create an Islamic state across the world. You know, it's just, again, it's sort of like a ramped up form of fake terror, if you like.
It's fear behind fear. So
even
when you know nothing's actually going to happen to you directly.
Sure, yeah.
You're still kind of worried at the back of your mind.
Yeah, and the other thing, of course, which points to the absurdity of Islamic State is, okay, Islam's greatest enemy is said to be Judaism, Now, you know, they've never attacked any Jewish interest in Israel, which again is a completely points to a completely absurd situation, certainly as, you know, Israel's right in the middle of the Middle East and you've got all these countries that are said to oppose them.
Nothing ever happens.
Nothing.
Well, not exactly by ISIS, at least.
No. So
there's enough problems happening there anyway. It's not like any more need to be added.
No, exactly. Another aspect in terms of methods of coercion or in terms of how people are recruited into performing acts of terrorism, if you will, I was thinking of 7-7, because in that instance, it's quite an interesting case, actually. The 7-7 bombers, they actually were recruited as part of a drill, but they thought it was like a dummy drill. In other words, it would help prevent a real act of terrorism. So far from being these radicalised, crazy Muslims, they were actually trying to, you know, help alleviate the fear. And in what actually happened in that instance was they realised that they were being duped. They realised that they were getting involved in something that they didn't want to be involved in. And one of them was actually shot outside Canary Wharf. And that story was quickly removed from the internet and the mainstream news outlets, because he was on his way. He was trying to alert the media, the main newspapers, because that's where they're based, and obviously that wasn't going to happen.
So that's why he was shot then.
That was why he was shot, but also, as we know, you know, we can't have anything off message, so that's why the story of him being shot was quickly hushed up, because normally the actual patsies are killed after the event, so, you know, they don't sing like a canary after the event. So.
But killing them before the event, just a bad show.
Yeah, it's a bad show, and it kind of like can cause problems.
So I think it's a good idea now just to think of what's going to happen in the future of all of this.
Yeah.
So where is terrorism going to go?
Well, this what springs to mind, as we've been warned of repeatedly, is cyber terrorism, and you all know more about that than me.
Yeah. So at the moment, cyber terrorism, you know, almost seems to be the world of pranksters.
Yeah.
So,
teenage kids with too much time on their hands, stuck in their room, yeah.
Yeah, so they're always pointing to the group Anonymous.
Yeah.
But actually, they seem to be on the good side of things.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
You know, they've already said that they're fighting against paedophiles, they're fighting against ISIS, they fought against Al-Qaeda.
Yeah.
You know, so they're actually more on the good side of things than the bad.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the bad side of terrorism, that's when you get almost like state-to-state terrorism.
Yeah, sure.
So a great example of this was when it comes to Iranian's nuclear program.
Yeah.
And the Stuxnet software.
Yeah.
Which actually completely wiped out the program. Mm. Couldn't function there, you know. And this goes to show the sort of things that are being developed to fight against other nations.
Mm. Yeah. So what you're saying is that in future, it's going to be terrorism will tend to be on a grander scale, but basically, on oil, the platform will be the internet.
I believe that's almost the place with the furthest reach. Because the fact of a normal terrorist event fighting for land, these days that almost seems inefficient at spreading a message.
Mm.
And the way we have set up our society has almost left it weak at the knees when it comes to our technology.
Mm. Certainly that is the vulnerable point, but they've already kind of like prepped us in terms of, you know, things like banks, internet access going down for a day, or people not able to, say, withdraw cash. So they're already getting us, prepping us to the idea of some sort of failing in the system, aren't they?
Well, they're almost like little hiccups compared to what would be a failure in the system.
Yeah.
So not being able to access your bank account for a day seems kind of trivial if the complete banking system's database was corrupted.
Mm, yeah.
And they had no way of knowing how much was in your bank account or not.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. But in terms of trying to put a positive spin on the future, you say the great thing about the internet and things like social media, for all its craziness and absurdity, is the truth is getting out there about state-sponsored terrorism and, you know, how this is basically about promoting fear. And more people are waking up to the truth. So we both think that because of that, the fear aspect of terrorist events is becoming less and less powerful over time.
Yep, so their power is diminishing, and that's why they're almost ramping up their terror spree, and that's why you say it's always on the headlines these days.
Yeah, and the fact that they're having to reveal themselves more and more through these acts of, fake terror, false flag attacks, to me, doesn't demonstrate their power, actually demonstrates their weakness, because it's like they're coming, out from the veil. It's like, I think whether they've got another big terrorist event, another big 9/11 style attack in the offing, who knows? But I think because of the way in which technology's moved on in the last 15 years, development of smartphones, it's more difficult for them to pull off an event like that, because with social media, people can get out the truth of what's happening within seconds. So I think that's why they're a bit reticent about, pressing the big red button and, just... having another huge event. What do you think?
I think you're perfectly right in the fact that because of the internet, the information is spreading. So we are finding out about things far quicker than we used to. Used to be, years after the event details would start coming out.
Mm.
Now we're getting them within minutes.
Mm.
So that is helping fight this fake terror, as you put it.
Mm.
But it's not until... it's not happening on the news anymore. It's not until people stop believing in the news that things will really start to change.
Because
like you say, they've got an agenda and they're going to fight for their agenda for every last bit of soul they've got.
And as with any tool, the tool of terrorism which they use to create fear, the more you use it, the less effect it has. And I know, a lot of people like you, Mike, who aren't into trying to find out the truth or awakening, to their greater divinity as a human being, and are very much ensconced in the mainstream matrix. I think even them, it's like, oh, another terrorist attack? Oh, right, yeah, what's for dinner? Do you know what I mean? It's where the effect is becoming mitigated because it's just so many attacks.
It's almost becoming commonplace.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it is becoming counterproductive, I would say, really.
Personally, I think so too, but, they are... just following certain agendas that have been laid out decades in advance.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine they would weave too much away from the plans.
No.
Because they're so used to plans.
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, we'd be interested to hear your views on terrorism at this time, as it seems to be in the media. So please do contact us through our Discerning Consciousness Facebook page, and message us on there. We'd be happy to hear any points you have to say. And also, you may or may not be aware that Mike and I are guests on The Conspiracy Show, which is a very interesting show on UK Talk Radio.
Yeah, that's a very interesting outlet for us, and we're just trying out for the time being.
Yeah, trying to hone our radio skills. Yeah, it's very interesting stuff. So we'll be back soon and speak to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.